Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for episode 40 of Pepperdine People. I'm Colleen Graffey, and I'm joined today by U.S. Congressman Frank Wolf. Congressman Wolf represents Virginia's 10th District. He is co-chair of the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission, which is a bipartisan organization of Congress that works to raise awareness about international human rights. Representative Wolf also sits on the Appropriations Committee and serves on the Transportation and Housing and Urban Development Subcommittee. Congressman Wolf, thank you so much for coming to visit us at Pepperdine and
glad
for joining us for the International Religious Freedom Conference. I think our first question needs to be, why should Americans care about international religious freedom?
Well, Ronald Reagan said the words in the Constitution and in the Declaration of Independence were really a covenant for the entire world, not just for the people in Philadelphia in 1776 or 1787 during the Constitution, but for the world. And the founding document, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women are created equal, endowed by their creator, by God. And America has been, this has been in the forefront of human rights and religious freedom. And whether it be standing up with regard to communism, whether speaking out on behalf of the persecuted in Sudan or whatever, it is something very, very important that we should be doing.
And what can Congress do about that?
Well, Congress can do a lot of things. I'm on the commission. We do a lot of things. We have a Religious Freedom Commission that I helped set up about 10 years ago. I also have a bill in to create a special envoy to advocate for religious minorities in the Middle East, to advocate both within our own government and to advocate with other governments. For instance, to one example, the Christian community in Iraq before the war was about 1.5 million. Right now, they're down to 400,000 to 500,000. There are many Iraqi Christians who have been forced out of the country, living in ghettos in Syria and Lebanon and in Jordan. And just before Christmas, if you recall, there was they went into an Iraqi church, gunned down 70-some Christians because they were Christian, and the service was in Aramaic, the same language that Jesus spoke in. Now, other than Israel, more biblical activity took place in Iraq than any other country. Abraham was from Iraq. Rebecca was from Iraq. Jacob, the 12 tribes, lived in Iraq. Esther, for such a time like this, was from Iraq. Daniel in the lion's den, Daniel's buried in Kirkuk, was from Iraq. Babylon, Nineveh. So we have an obligation. So with this bill that we're now pushing, a bipartisan bill, the Democratic member is Anna Eshoo, who represents somewhere in this area. I'm not really sure, not knowing California very well, but we have a bipartisan coalition pushing to pass a bill to create a special envoy similar, and you will understand, similar to what President Bush did when he had the special envoy, John Danforth, to work on Sudan. This would be the same type of operation, same caliber of person whose number one job would be to advocate for religious minorities and mainly Christians, but others in the Middle East.
Coptic all over Christian, the world.
No,
just
mainly
the
in the Middle East, and also in Afghanistan and in Pakistan. Egypt, the Coptic Christians are being persecuted. In Iran, the Baha'is are being slaughtered. They're going through a very, very difficult time. In Pakistan, the Ahmadis, who are Muslim but not Sunni Muslim or Shia Muslim, are going through a terrible time. If you recall, there was the bombing in their mosque several months ago. So this person would advocate, because if we're going to give all this foreign aid, we gave Mubarak over $50 billion, mm-hmm. and the Coptic Christians live like second-class citizens, and the Baha'is in Egypt couldn't even get a driver's license because they were not Christian, they were not Muslim. So there's a lot that the Congress can do to advocate for people who, a faith, all faith, Catholic, Protestant, Jewish, whatever the case may be.
Well, your passion about the subject is quite apparent, and perhaps you can tell us how you first became interested in this. And I think you described to me before that you'd really not traveled before you came to Congress. And, of course, Pepperdine students have a large array of study abroad programs. But your first experience, perhaps you can tell our audience.
Sure. Well, I had not traveled out of the country except for Canada once before I got elected to Congress. And in 1984, my best friend in Congress, a Democratic member, a liberal Democrat, Congressman Tony Hall, urged me to go to Ethiopia, where the famine — not many of your students will remember the famine, but it was a major famine. If you recall, the BBC camera crew broke the story. I jumped on an airplane, naively flew off to Ethiopia, and to make a long story short, went up to a camp in Alamata, run by World Vision and by Mother Teresa, and got waylaid in the camp. The airplane couldn't return for certain reasons. And it was a life-changing experience to see every morning many young people who have died over the night, the feeding. And so that trip, by traveling, opened up my eyes to see things that I had never known were really taking place. And then in 85, Congressman Hall and I went to Romania, where under the Ceausescu administration, very, very evil, if you know, they were bulldozing churches, persecuting Christians, doing terrible things. Those two trips literally got me interested in this issue. If you look at the issues in my brochure that I ran for Congress on, I never mentioned any international issues. Only after 84, the famine, and 85, going to Romania, experiencing the persecution there, did I get interested in these issues.
And Sudan?
And then in Sudan, I went there in 1989. I went into the south. The South, as you know, the war in North-South went on for over 20 years. The South is mainly Christian, some animist, some Muslim, against the Muslim North, the Khartoum government. And Osama bin Laden lived in Sudan from 91 to 96. And I saw this persecution and the hunger and the famine, and so kind of developed a love affair, if you will, for southern Sudan, particularly for the people in the villages, and went there and, of course, have been back to Sudan a number of times, culminating in 2005 when they signed the North-South Peace Agreement. But those a week in Sudan in a refugee camp, working in a feeding center, or just, I mean, is a life-changing experience. So I would say, had I not gone to Ethiopia, Had I not gone to Romania, and had I not gone to Sudan, my life and time and service in Congress would be totally different. And lastly, in the Bible, there are so many passages. Jesus talks more about the poor than almost any other issue. And there's so many passages about the persecuted, the oppressed. And so if you take your faith serious, not just selectively, but here's what the Bible says, then I think America and all of us are obligated to care about the oppression. In China today, there are Catholic bishops, Protestant pastors. They're persecuting the Muslims, the Uyghurs. They're plundering Tibet. All those things come together that we should be interested in. And by going and seeing, not going to Paris — it's okay to go to Paris — but going into a refugee camp and spending some time, I think, can be a life-changing trip. So the fact that Pepperdine has these trips where people can go abroad is very, very important.
But how do you balance that with realpolitik? I mean, the reality is that China owns most of America's debt. When we want to speak out about abuses of China, we have to take into account the strong relationship that we wanted to have with this emerging power. How do we balance that? The president did not meet with the Dalai Lama because he was concerned how that would affect his first state trip to China. So how do we balance that?
Well, I think the model would be President Reagan. President Reagan in 1983 gave a speech in Orlando, Florida, where he talked to the Soviet Union and the evil empire. And then he told Gorbachev, he said, tear down that wall. Reagan went to Moscow in 88 to the Donilov Monastery and spoke out for human rights and religious freedom. And yet, there's that one movie of Reagan tripling and Gorbachev kind of grabbing him and holding him up. And if we all remember, and I do particularly, at Reagan's funeral, Gorbachev came. So you can advocate and speak out on behalf without being mean, without being, you know, rude, with... I think Reagan really provided a model. Reagan cared deeply about human rights, religious freedom. He cared about freedom and liberty. And I think the model has been, and I would just say, I thought what President George W. Bush did with regard to Sudan, having the Chinese have done more to perpetuate the genocide incident than any other country. But Reagan did meet with the Dalai Lama. He didn't let the fact that we owe money to China interfere. So I think that's an example. But if there's one overall model, I think it was what President Reagan did, because you can do it in a way that's respectful but forceful. And, you know, when you're a dissident in prison, to know that the President of the United States is advocating for freedom in your country, it's just unbelievable. As I talk to dissidents who have been in prison, particularly in the gulags in the Soviet Union, they knew of Reagan's first speech. However, they found out, I'm not sure, when he called the Soviet Union the evil empire, because they finally felt someone in the West cares. So I think you just have to do what's right.
We're criticized for propping up these Middle East countries. We're seen to be supporting and having as allies those who are oppressing their people. What's our answer to that?
Well, I have never been a great supporter of the Mubarak government. I've offered amendments to take away foreign aid. They all were failed. I offered an amendment last year in the Congress. I couldn't get a resolution condemning the Mubarak government. I don't think we should ever stand with the dictators. I just don't think that's in our DNA. We ought to be putting pressure on them. Again, the same way that Reagan put pressure on Gorbachev and on the Soviet Union. The American embassy in Cairo or the American embassy wherever ought to be an island of freedom. It has not been an island of freedom. So I guess if you're talking to other congressmen, maybe it'd be a different story. I have never been very taken with Mubarak. Mubarak got over $50 billion from us and never, I mean, he had Ayman Nour in prison for over a couple of years. And so I think we should always speak out for human rights and religious freedom, but do it in an appropriate way. I don't mean in a mean, boisterous, angry, saber-rattling way, but again, back the way that was done, I think, by President Reagan in the 80s.
Thank you very much. If you have one word to say to students who are thinking about public service, since you've given over 30 years of your life, what would your message be to them?
Well, I think they ought to consider running for office, because the chances are they're as good as the congressman or senator that's in. So I think, you know, I'd wanted to be in Congress since I was in third grade of elementary school. I stutter very badly. And people told me that I can never run for office. And I lost in 76. Lost in 78, and won in 80. And I just tell you, you ought to follow your heart. If you really care about these issues, human rights, religious freedom, whatever the case may be, being involved in public service is very, very important. You're not going to get the big bucks that you get on the Wall Street law firm, but you get the satisfaction that I think you really can't get from a Wall Street law firm. So I urge them to go ahead and do it. And you know what? They really very well might win.
Congressman Wolf, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your insights, and thank you for joining us for Pepperdine People.
Glad to be here. Thank you very much.